Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG pod overflow, the Cinephobe cold opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
Said the OG pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays. You're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like? Because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora. He's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/Count the Dings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Tom, best dairy-based dessert?
The only correct answer here is a peanut butter cup blizzard from Dairy Queen.
I'm with you on the genre. I would go, actually, Topps frozen custard from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And I'm not just saying that because this is Top Chef Wisconsin. It is the best dairy-based dessert, certainly in the continental U.S. This is Pack Your Knives. I'm Kevin Arnovitz.
And I'm Tom Haberstroh.
Tom, you called it a bombshell episode when we were talking earlier, and you were right. This is a bombshell episode. The first place chef goes home in an elimination challenge that was as open-ended as anything we've seen this season. We have one chef returning to the competition and one chef that nobody has laid eyes on entering the competition. We are now at 11, and finally, just kind of snuck it in there, the judges, that they reserve the right to invoke a double elimination at any moment from here on out. It might be this week, it might be that next week. You don't know when they are going to summon the double elimination, but chefs need to be on guard. That's kind of a fun little twist.
Lot of bombshells in this episode. The double elimination return. Then you also had kind of this Rossica. I don't even want to say just based on the fact that she was the top point person, the top ranked chef in our scoring system heading into this episode. I also feel like Rossica captured the spirit of Top Chef and was such a fun contestant that, like, I think she could have won the fan favorite this year had she not been out so soon. And so it's not just that we're losing a really high performing chef in a season that hasn't been, you know, throwing their best stuff. So we're not just losing the top rated chef. We're losing someone who's very fun and captures this very enlightened spirit of Rossica that we learned that she's 25 years old in this episode. This is a huge loss, Kevin. And I don't even have her on my team.
It's a huge loss. I mean, again, you said it, and I really like the way you said it, right? She did capture the spirit of the show. She is somebody who says, sure, I will do a barley pretzel cake. Yeah, I'll win with chipolini onions and dried cherries. I mean, she is somebody who has, you know, just risk after risk. She did the doll canal. She did that little egg, won for that on the, when she was partnered up with Danny when the runners were taking over episode 4. I mean, she is somebody who has been, you're right, the fact that she is the leader of the standings is a reflection of the fact that she's also been probably one of the only two or three reliably consistent chefs this season. And that's what makes it so, I mean, this opens up an enormous hole at the top of the standings. This opens up a lane for someone. And it just the way it happened. I mean, we always say that the key to Top Chef is executing risk. Is she somebody who had executed risk, but she took a risk and she did not execute, did not even come close. We'll talk more about the specifics and just what went wrong for her later on. Tom, you sort of watching LCK. This is the week where the first payoff comes. We had not one, but two chefs from LCK entering, re-entering the competition.
Another curveball here, because, you know, doing the math, we're not too far away from Restaurant Wars, and they had a double elimination, where I guess three chefs in Last Chance Kitchen. We had Charlie, Kalina, and of course, Su An, who I mean, spoiler alert, you've already watched the episode, everyone who's listening, but I thought he was going to be back in the competition no matter what. And I'm not saying it's rigged, but it would have felt so hollow if they brought him into the competition. He's been such an electric chef there. I love he's one of those people that I just want him on my screen the entire time. He's got funny remarks. He's got great energy about him. He's confident, but yet also very unpredictable. He doesn't know where he's going to land half the time. He's like a cat. You throw him in the air, and then he's going to land on both of his feet somehow, no matter what kind of twists and turns he goes along the way. And so he has, you know, he goes up against Charlie, Kalina, and Su An comes up with in the Breakfast Club sandwich. This is not a coming-of-age 80s movie from, what's his name, the director?
John Hughes.
I was going to say Jim Henson, but that is not the other JH. John Hughes, this is not Breakfast Club. This is not 16 Candles. This is Club Sandwich. We're going to make a club sandwich, but breakfast themed. And I love this idea. I just think when I was a kid, whenever we went to a restaurant, I would always order the club sandwich. Even though it tore the shit out of my mouth, the roof of my mouth. Kevin, I love a good club sandwich.
Club Sandwich, an American classic. And yeah, he has been just, if you haven't watched LCK, he's had quite the run. He was brought in at the beginning. Again, we've all speculated on the circumstances under which he's competing, yeah. Whether his wife has already divorced him for just picking up after the wedding and joining the sequestered cloister that is Top Chef.
She's still in Jamaica right now.
Yeah, she's at a Ritz-Carlton in Rose Hill right now, right. And the funny thing is that he's done all kinds of crazy stuff in Last Chance Kitchen. He's done a smoking, foggy Caesar salad that's got fog in it. I mean, he's done all kinds of crazy stuff. So it's really pleased to see him. Kalina is back. And then again, we have this open-ended double elimination. Who knows? It could be this week, could be any week. Let's start with the quick fire. And just because, nothing here suggested. I mean, we had the usual suspects. You know, there was nothing here that suggested Rasika was having an off game. It is a dairy-based dessert in 45 minutes. Winner gets $7,500. The guest judge is one of my favorites, Christina Tosi, who is we know her as David Chang's pastry chef for a very long time. The stuff is so popular in the Momofuku Empire that she opens Milk Bar. And Tom, there are few things more reliable than me if I'm going eastbound on Melrose Avenue after leaving a West Hollywood appointment and I am passing by the Milk Bar right before La Brea. The car is going to veer into that little crappy strip center with the dry cleaners and Milk Bar, and I'm going to be ordering either a slice of crack pie or a serving of cereal milk ice cream soft serve topped with cornflakes. I love Milk Bar. My partner thinks a little too sweet. I have this funny thing about dessert. I want my desserts to be sweet. And the crack pie.
You want your teeth to ache. It's so sweet.
Yes. Oh. I want all the enamel stripped. And those are two of my very favorite things to get. It used to be you had to go to New York to get your cereal milk soft serve or your crack pie. Now I can do it here. So she was the guest judge. And as apropos, as you would imagine, dairy-based dessert. Kristen noted that frozen custard is obviously a big thing in Wisconsin. I hope we still have like a dedicated frozen custard challenge.
I thought we were going to do that.
Yeah.
I thought she said frozen custard and then we went back to the dairy-based dessert. I thought we were going to get there.
I was really hoping for, hey, whether it's Leon's, whether it's Cops, you know, that one of these places you do the whole, hey, here's the matriarch or the patriarch of the institution and they're going to show you how the ice cream is made and here, let's go milk a cow and here is the liquid nitrogen and here's how they do it and here's how they churn. And I want to do like that, you know, with the little acoustic music that they always do when they really learn the craft of whatever it is they're doing. Like, oh, look, here's balsamic vinegar in Modena, you know, kind of. I've been hoping for that. Kristen is right that she should not disclose her favorite frozen custard in Milwaukee because it is a blood sport. People will, on social media, as she said, will get after her because it is a matter of identity in Milwaukee. You know, cops is my favorite, but, you know, you tell a Southsider that, they'll tell you Leon's. Folks out west in the western suburbs, they like their Oscars. You got a whole contingent that loves Kits, which has been there like 400 years. Like since the first furriers came to Wisconsin, like it's got this old great neon sign. Frozen custard is a religion in Wisconsin. So she is correct not to disclose her favorite because that will draw all kinds of crazies out of the woodwork.
But no, Kevin, I veer the other way. I say, you know what? She's the host of Top Chef. She has to weigh in here. She's a judge and she can judge Midwestern Wisconsin frozen custard. Be the voice of authority, Kristen. You know what? I think Padma's weighing in. I think Padma's coming in and saying, oh, I'm going to land right here. And I think, you know what, Kristen, make it a dish with Kish. Make it, create the content around your ruling and have, you know, your favorite chef or your favorite custard shop to come in and do its own episode of Dish with Kish. That's how you turn a negative into a positive. Or, hey, I don't want to weigh in here because I might get too much shit thrown at me. You know what? Turn it into content. That's what I say.
Yeah. We will ask her to come out. Now there are documents online showing her very happy outside Leon's Frozen Custard on the south side.
Ooh.
She did visit that with Gail. That's a great place. They're butter pecan. The butter pecan frozen custard at Leon's is a can't miss item. If you ever find yourself in town, Tom, doing a little work, you know, bucks or whatever, you got to get some butter pecan. I'm still a cops man, but I do carve out the exception for the butter pecan at Leon's.
Well, what did you think about this quick fire? We had the bottom three, Manny with the melted. He knew it as soon as it happened. The whipped cream just didn't work with the fried churro. Anytime you have something crispy underneath a whipped cream or some sort of ice cream, you know, like I think Kristen said it in her, maybe it was on the regular Top Chef episode or was it on a Dish Kish, the idea of like cake and ice cream. It's such a classic for me. I always like the warm cake mixed with the cold ice cream. But you know, cake doesn't need to be crispy to be good. This dish with the fried churro did not work. Manny continues to just hang on by the skin of his teeth. And he's, you know, we get him working out with the power bottom to open up the episode. And I gotta say, Manny is just riding at the very skin of very top of this precipice here. And he is like teetering every single challenge.
He's had a rough couple weeks and it's going to be interesting. Again, you know, his Pasoli, he comes out of the gate really strong.
Yeah.
And this is where you start to sort of evaluate him as a contestant. Hey, like, it's Pasoli something that was in his back pocket. It's something, it's a specialty of his. What do you know? You get soup, boom, easy call. Does he have the range you'd need to, you know, get to a final four? Danny, oddly though, one of the stronger contestants who ultimately wins the week in the elimination, you know, his black sesame cream puff doesn't impress for whatever reason.
He has an aesthetic, doesn't he? He has an aesthetic.
Oh yeah. You know, he's got an aesthetic and it is aesthetic, right? It is. I mean, he is a guy who, even when they ask for chaos, gives you something refined, and he does likes structure. He is a tech. He is, I think, the most technical chef. But in this particular instance, the technique didn't overcome just the concept. Although I'm very into whenever you get like the purely sort of Japanese flavor mochi selection, you know, whether you get the taro or the green tea or black sesame, red bean, whatever it is, I always choose the black sesame. I love black sesame as sort of a dessert item.
Yeah, he didn't nail this one. Again, the cream puff just didn't land. Dan, the texture just didn't work on his. But the top three, Kalina, Michelle, and Amanda, I want to give a shout out to Savannah with the little like leafy tweel thing that she had on hers. It felt like she arrived. Like this episode, I felt like Savannah arrived. She didn't win either of her challenges, but I felt like Savannah just kind of, she made a statement this week.
Yeah, I mean, she is cooking consistently good food now. And I think that wasn't necessarily the case early in the season. And she's a cop. She reminds me a little bit of Adrian. You remember from a few seasons ago, like she's a confidence builder. Yeah. Dan on the bottom. First time I think he's been on the bottom of any round. I mean, part of the problem was with Dan, I just want to go back to here, is this is a guy who was actually, it's usually you have to take a classic dessert and turn it vegan. He had a vegan recipe he was trying to turn classic. And I'm going to offer something very controversial, Tom. I think dark chocolate is trash.
Oh, no.
I'm sorry. I think dark chocolate is trash. We've been sold that it's actually healthy if you eat it after dinner. It's sort of, you know, it's the dessert that you don't have to feel guilty about. I don't know why anybody would ever have a piece of dark chocolate if milk chocolate were available.
No, no. Milk chocolate is diluted chocolate.
Go eat a raw cacao bean. No one does that. There's a reason, right?
Milk chocolate is, do you like chocolate or do you like milk? You want a reduced chocolate? You got the bitterness, it's naturally sweet. I love a good dark chocolate. I will crush a good dark chocolate. You know what, Kevin? We very rarely disagree on food. I'm team dark chocolate here.
I just think it's bitter. It's like, oh, what's the point? What's the point? What's the point? In our house, we throw away dark chocolate. But I'm with you, Savannah. I thought I had a night. She wasn't on the top three, but I thought you're right. She is cooking very well. The top three were Kalina, back from LCK and strong with her salted caramel and rum custard, mascarpone and creme fraiche whip. I love like rum caramel. That's a nice flavor profile. That's kind of where I live.
Yeah. And is it caramel where you grew up in Atlanta or is it caramel?
Oh, no, it's caramel. I'm a Southerner.
Yeah, caramel.
Amanda's like, I still don't quite understand the cheddar biscuit shortcake inspired by Bananas Foster with the vanilla chantilly. But I mean, there's banana in the cheddar. But apparently she executed it well as a shortcake. Again, there was a bizarre lack of cake. I guess 40 minutes isn't a long time, but she was one of the two kind of cake makers and both cakes finished on top.
Kevin, I got to say, Amanda is... I feel like a sleeping giant on this show. Everything she seems to like, she's never freaking out. She has everything figured out in her head. She's got this Pokemon energy, as she says, where she's just, I don't know. She just think every time the prompt is thrown at her, it seems like she knows what she wants to do and she executes. I think Amanda, even though she wasn't in the top for the elimination challenge, I feel like Amanda's really strong. You put me onto Amanda pretty early where you just felt like she's got Top Chef figured out on a different level. And you can see it in this dish where it doesn't really make sense. And then they eat it and they're like, oh, this is awesome.
She has good concepts.
Mm-hmm.
Like every time she comes up with a plate, I'm like, oh, God, that sounds like something on a menu I would order. And I think that she's really strong conceptually. It's as you said, right? Like she generally has a vision. Sometimes it's, you know, down the line. Sometimes it's, wow, a little out there. Either way, she kind of knows how she's going to assemble it. I mean, the execution isn't flawless always, but I still think conceptually, you know, she is as strong as any chef in the competition. It's just like if she can avoid big mistakes, I think she's going to hang around for a while. Like I really do. But the winner was Michelle. Kind of with the aw shucks, oh, I don't do dessert, which she often, you know, says, but
I'm just a pit master.
I'm just a pit master. Just give me a slab of meat and some wood chips. That's really all I, you know, I'm just here to help the ball club, right? And Michelle, in her humility, won again with a corn cake stuffed with mascarpone. What a great idea. Topped with basil cream. I love basil and strawberry together. There were a couple different strawberry basil combos in this episode. A little strawberry. It just looked delicious. It looked moist. She might not excel at dessert in her own estimation, but she made it work again.
I'm very proud to have her on my team, even though she had a dud in the elimination challenge. Very confusing episode for her. Still trying to wrap my head around what she was doing in the elimination challenge. But one thing I want to point out, we got a lot more beef between Laura and Dan.
Yes.
Again, some Laura-Dan beef in the quickfire challenge where she, you know, Dan can't find the dark chocolate and she's just kind of, you know, hoarding it. And do I have dark? I think I got dark chocolate here. And why didn't you tell me that? I just was calling it out for like 10 minutes here. And again, hearkening back to, I think it was the previous episode with the sauces that she was just mixing around the sauce papers and Dan didn't think too highly of that. So got a little bit more of the conflict here.
It's a personality type. If she indeed is this personality, you know, I always want to be generous and assume that the edit might be suggesting one of the things, but there is a pattern of, you know, is she inconsiderate or is she a space cadet? And I think like often space cadets are inconsiderate, like, you know, example, there's a very restricted parking on a city street. Oh, but there's this one space that could probably fit two cars. Do you park as close to the one of the two cars as possible, leaving room for possibly another person? Or do you just plop it right in the middle and take up two spaces, right?
Inconsiderate. Yep, inconsiderate.
I get the sense that Laura might be someone who, hey, not out of malice, not, hey, screw the world, just it wouldn't dawn on her that somebody else might actually, hey, every way, if it's as hard for you to park as it is everybody else, well, they might need a spot too, right? Like, she's kind of just that personality where – oh, I'm not going to clean everything up. Like it's, you know, on the floor I spilled, but hey, they're, you know, it's never done out of malice. It's never an extended middle finger. It's just one of those people in life who's completely inconsiderate, not by sheer selfishness or vindictiveness, but just kind of cluelessness.
Yeah. It didn't hurt her in this. And Dan, it's not a matter of like whether he would have found it earlier, the textures would have hit right. Just wanted to note, you know?
Yeah.
I'm also, Manny says he's got a personal challenge with desserts. Red flag here that Manny is not a fan of desserts or pastries in terms of this competition of Top Chef, which does not bode well for you if you're on Top Chef. And at this point,
although Tom, we would agree that there's a long tradition in Top Chef of like really advanced contestants kind of, I don't do pastry. Like that's the only thing I would say is by and large, like you can generally get away until the finale. That there's a long tradition of chefs who are like, that's why I hire a pastry chef. Like I don't do that, but I'm with you. It does show a lack of confidence and you know, it's always something right now with him. I do want to mention Sue, who finished in the middle, but because I think his dessert was very much a reflection of kind of like his sensibility, since a lot of us, if you haven't watched LCK, you might not know what kind of chef he is in the competition. He did a play on PBJ. He's a guy who loves to do very cleverly and whimsically a play on. In LCK, he did a play on fish and chips, a play on Caesar salad. And it's always fun. And frankly, the judges always like it. And so he did a puree with brioche on the bottom, little brioche chards he did with liquid nitrogen. He did some peanut brittle, some blueberry jam. So, you know, you had all the component pieces, bread, peanut butter, and jelly, but he did it in different things. Like he's a big, I'll do a play on, which I think tends to serve chefs well, particularly in quick fires. We'll see kind of in the big events, but he is a guy who's just has extreme use of whimsy in a really fun way. I like his food.
Yeah. I love Su-on, and if we could do a redraft, Kevin, he'd be top three, top four pick in this competition.
I mean, we want to see more in the elimination rounds, like how he performs. But so far, I said it last week, Tom, he's got some serious game. I think everyone needs to. If you have your fantasy league, you might have to, I don't know, you might have to have a bidding war or something. Considerations for next season. Tom, you're much better at kind of recommending some remediations. If for whatever reason your league didn't account for Sue, how do you account for him down the stretch? You might be able to come up with a good suggestion or two. But I'll tell you, I think he's going to hang around.
Hello, listener. Guess who's back? It's me, Anthony Mays, your favorite butcher turned podcast producer, and I'm here to talk to you about ButcherBox. ButcherBox is the most convenient way to get high quality meat and seafood that you can trust delivered straight to your doorstep, free shipping, vacuum sealed packaging. It's ready to go right then. It's ready to pop in the freezer. You get exclusive member deals and a variety of high-quality cuts at an amazing value. Going to the grocery store can be a huge pain. You're usually in a rush at an inconvenient time. You're waiting in line at the meat counter. You're taking a number. Maybe this place doesn't have a number. You're jostling with fellow customers. You're trying to get that ribeye that you want or that nice piece of salmon. Maybe the butcher that you're dealing with has a bad attitude or something. I don't know. That was never me, I promise, but maybe it happens. ButcherBox takes all of that out of the picture. You are always prepared with meat and seafood in the freezer, and you're not going to find quality for this price anywhere else other than ButcherBox. So sign up at butcherbox.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S, and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional $20 off. You can choose salmon, chicken breasts, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/dings and use code DINGS, D-I-N-G-S, to choose your free for a year offer plus get $20 off your first order. Hello, listener. I'm sure you don't need me to tell you that we at Cinephobe love our pets. Zach and Boogie are inseparable. I've got two cats and a dog, and Amin is giving his best ass-on performance to convince dog owners that he loves their pet.
Hey, little, hey, boy, how you doing? And Noodle's just like,
Which is why today's episode is sponsored by the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program. For many pet parents, summer is all about making travel plans like adventuring through the national parks, visiting pet-friendly beaches, or road tripping across the country. Wherever your journeys take you and your furry friend, you can help protect them along the way with a plan from ASPCA Pet Health Insurance. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customizable accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they may need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are, because vet bills can really add up, especially when you're least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim, and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/dings. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/dings. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independence American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer and is not engaged in the business of insurance.
That brings us to the Elimination Challenge, the Chaos Challenge with Maddie Matheson. What a fun. I was waiting for kind of some bear representation on the show.
Kevin, have you remembered a time in which the contestants were this excited to see a guest judge? They were bouncing around the kitchen. The Top Chef kitchen was popping with all the contestants just screaming and dancing and just like, oh my God, he's right here. And this guy, I feel like 5 years ago, I wouldn't have known who he was on the culinary scene. And now he's one of the top most recognizable, or at least most, I don't know, he's got this energy about him that is so magnetic. And I think when the chefs, you could see just the respect that they had. Savannah was just thrilled to see Maddie Matheson, as I think Amanda too. What a cool story, Maddie Matheson. He's a Canadian chef that just kind of bounced into the Viceland world and became this celebrity chef that made its way into the Bear, kind of playing his own character, but so much fun.
Yeah, he had a place in Toronto called Parts and Labor. It's on the way, way west end of Queen, like way west. And that also there's always was like a place where there was like some like kind of DJ magic going on. And there was like a basement, kind of a speakeasy quality to it. I never got a chance to eat there. It was kind of fairly far west if you were hanging out in the arena or even up on Bloor where I stayed. But, you know, really a place everyone loved. I think it closed a few years ago, but that could have, I didn't know about that. And it's funny because I'd known about the restaurant, didn't match it with the actor I knew from The Bear. And then I didn't realize like he had this entire culinary background, which is just really cool. You just don't see a lot of people go from, you know, that do kind of scripted acting after coming out of a kitchen.
Kevin, who is Snoop from The Wire, right? The person who plays the actual character in the world and then transfers over to in the acting career.
He is the Snoop of The Bear, right?
He plays the plumber, kind of do-it-all handyman, but he's also got some cooking chops. So he's not quite a traditional chef or a line cook or something on the show, but he is a trained chef who is in a chef show. And so I'm wondering, do you have like in your head just characters like Snoop or characters like Maddie Matheson that are playing themselves on a show that they're not like trained actors? Anyone that pop outside of Snoop on the Wire?
I think there was that kid in Euphoria that unfortunately, I think tragically died recently.
Oh no, okay.
He was the dealer.
Maze is saying Angus Cloud is his name.
That's right, that's right, that's right, that's right. And by the way, like really good, kind of a really dark show that works well, Angus Cloud. So I think he kind of also transitioned from just sort of that life to a role approximating that life, I think. Do not quote me on that.
Maddie, when he was on The Bear, he's not a scene stealer in the sense that he's hogging the screen, but it just everything he did on the show, I was eating it up. So that was a good pun, by the way. So Maddie shows up and he just says, hey, Kevin Arnovitz, if you're listening, I am giving you the challenge that you've been pining for. Mm-hmm. The idea, we're going to strip away the constraints. You just cook a dish that is so off the wall, whatever chaos on a plate you want to do, just go do it. There's no real, I mean, yeah, you're going to have 20 minutes at the specialty market, $150, but really just just cook a really cool, interesting dish and make it interesting.
It was really nice to see a free play episode where chefs could just stretch their legs, because I think this season's Elimination Challenge has been pretty restrictive. Team play is restrictive. Set menus are restrictive. Cheese for 100 people in 95 degree weather is restrictive. Strict assignments, you can only do one of seven bar snacks and it has to be that, is restrictive. You know, let these chefs cook already. And I think that we finally got that this season. Now, what was really interesting, Tom, was to see which chefs kind of recoiled at the lack of restriction. I'm talking about Michelle in particular. Mm. You know, it turns out that not everybody, it sounds like one of those great, like, you know, debates you'd have in college philosophy where it was like, you know, do people really want to be free? Or, you know, do they want the Leviathan? Do they want to really exist in a state of nature or not? And I think that was sort of, it tripped up some of the chefs who were like, what the hell does that mean? Chaos, you know, where some chefs are like, watching Dan just say, okonomiyaki funnel cake, and I'm just going to throw a bunch of crazy stuff on it, and it's going to be coherent, and everyone's going to love it, right? And then there were certain chefs, again, like Michelle, who was just like, I have no idea what they're talking about. She seemed eminently frustrated from the lack of explanation. She wants parameters, and which makes sense if you think about, you know, so much being a pit master is really being a chemist. It's being a physicist. It is just, there are very precise ways you smoke meat. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, it wasn't a surprise that she would prefer to have just a couple. And she's done, frankly, very well with the restrictions. Like, give her an assignment. There's nobody in this competition who's been more reliable at executing the assignment than Michelle. But she might just, if she's not somebody who wants to have boundless creative leeway, it's like, no, I'm a chef. Tell me what you want and I will deliver it to you. Like, just cook. Well, no. Cook what? And so I thought that was so interesting, but it was so welcome because, again, I've enjoyed this season for so many reasons, but I have to say I'm ready to watch talented chefs just cook their food. It is fun to watch talented chefs cook. I want some guidelines, but I don't want it to be a team or a bar snack or you got to do olives, whether you like olives or not. You got to do a chicken course, whether you like chicken or not. Like, just cook. And we got that. Finally.
Yeah, we got some variety. We got some variety this season where it was like, you got a bunch of team challenges and restrictive challenges and prompts. And now we get kind of stretch your legs, like you said. And I thought right when they said it, chaos, it's an open-ended thing. It really upset and really just put Kristen Kish off a little bit. Was like, how rare do you have the host of Top Chef being like, I don't even get what the prompt is. And I love that honesty and transparency from Kristen, where it was like three different scenes where she's like, I'm glad the five of you are here with me, because I don't know what this prompt is. You rarely get that kind of, I wouldn't say pushback from the host on the conceit. But we did get that a little bit in ways that we really haven't had on Top Chef, where it's, you don't get Gail or Tom or Padma being like, this conceit doesn't really work.
But it's not a surprise, right? Because when you look at the visuals they use, like that hot dog that was all over the place and whatever. I mean, it's not a surprise that Kristen, who swoons when she looks at Danny's food, right?
Mm-hmm.
There is an orderliness to her cooking. I mean, she won with technicality, with like thoughtful planning. She is definitely in. I wouldn't say she's like Michelle in the sense that like she wants like very strict guidelines. And I think she would have succeeded, but she is somebody who I think when you listen to her, you know, critique at the table, talk about food, there is an orderliness. It's actually, cooking is the absence of chaos. Yes. A kitchen is chaos. Oh, there are things everywhere in the flour. And look at my station. It's bad. No, but I think Kristen imagines, at least my interpretation of her amazing kind of cooking, is she imagines the kitchen to be a place where you take all these disparate, chaotic elements and then you settle the chaos with a plan, with a dish that is thought out, that has intentionality. And chaos is the absence of intention in many ways.
So I do think that you're right. Is Kristen, it's kind of her personality that she wants that prompt or wants some sort of guidance, wants some sort of framework. And I think with this Maddie Matheson chaos challenge, you know, you look at him and he's just like this beautiful chaos, right? You just feel this energy about him that you never know what to expect. He's covered in tattoos. He's got this beautiful mustache and he's got this kind of Chris Farley personality to him that you just, he's really fun, right? So the prompt of being like a really fun, unpredictable, you know, color outside the lines here is really, you know, consistent with the host, which I really enjoyed. And I like the fact that we got a little bit of a confessional kind of like halftime breakdown with Tom Colicchio here, where they're discussing, you know, they're walking around the kitchen, asking them what they think. And then, you know, they kind of do a little huddle up. And that's when we get the backstory of Savannah. Now, Savannah, apparently, Kevin, correct me if I'm wrong, she had this like, I don't know if it was a competition or they brought in Maddie on like a voicemail or something where he was giving feedback to her dish, and she had this mustard seed element to this dish.
Mustard greens, I think it was mustard greens.
Mustard greens, you're right. Mustard greens element. And he like was like, I don't get it. That doesn't make any sense. So like, refresh my memory. How did that go down? Because I thought that was a really cool full circle moment here.
I couldn't glean exactly the context, and I actually went and Googled like Savannah and Maddie Matheson, mustard greens, you know. But the way she described it is about a decade ago, she had the opportunity to have some kind of consult with Maddie about a dish. And I don't know, you know, I thought, oh, perhaps this was on a cooking show 10 years ago or something. And I kind of went looking for it and couldn't find anything. And I, you know, tried again in Google searches. But, you know, apparently she was able to glean some feedback over a dessert she had done that included greens. And the comment, the general critique of the dish was like, what the hell are you putting something that doesn't make sense on the dish? Like, it's a dessert. Don't put mustard greens. It doesn't make sense.
Mm.
And, you know, this always, like, look, nobody likes criticism. And I think, you know, when, you know, Maddie was introduced, it, you know, it sort of brought back the memory that, you know, I kind of disappointed him, or I bricked the dish. Oh, here's an opportunity. I knew what I wanted to do. I just didn't make it make sense. Now I have a chance to reverse that and make it make sense. And I'm going to do it again. You know, now we could argue the definition of insanity is doing the same thing again and expecting a different outcome.
But it was 10 years ago.
It was 10 years ago. I'm a better chef.
You're a different person. Right. And she came in, and Tom, at the confessional, at the halftime presentation presented by State Farm, he was basically saying, you know, what do you think, Maddie? And Maddie was like, I don't know why she's doing that. Essentially saying, you know, it didn't work the first time. What I'm really curious to see how she lands this plane. We got a couple other just kind of quips from Tom and Maddie, but that one, you know, that one stood out, that it's going to be a trust fall. They said is that they're falling backwards at summer camp and hoping that someone catches them as they descend to the earth. And I think, you know, Savannah really came in here doing the preserve mustard stem and the whole circle of life aspect of it, and the potato souffle that she felt like she was nailing, like when she put it in the fryer and it was cooking just right. And she's like, man, I'm doing this for the first time, but kind of also, you know, this has a lot of meaning, this dish to me. And it was good to see that, you know, you always want that story arc element and that storytelling element to any TV show that you're watching. It's hard to find that with a scripted show or with a reality show, but this particular thing I think really struck a chord, and I really liked that full circle loop.
It was a strange dish in the, so far as it was sort of a dessert, but even Tom allowed for the fact that you could have actually opened a meal with this because it wasn't overly sweet. It was a potato souffle. Golden milk, which is usually made with like turmeric, or it's kind of chai-ish, or I don't know, some tropical fruit, and then a mustard green puree. So it was, you know, I'll be honest, I still don't have a total grasp on the dish. And I think Colicchio said it, that it was, it absolutely had, it made no logical sense in a great way. And I guess in that respect, it was sort of very much a chaos cuisine. And she ended up, Tom, we had a very odd judges structure. I still want to go through all the dishes, but we had four kind of top and two bottom, which is a very strange asymmetry that you don't generally see. They're usually pretty faithful to the three and three in an individual challenge.
I'm wondering if they wanted to kind of play into the two could go home here. So they're going to have two, an even number on the bottom. And so we got to kind of, if we want to feature six chefs on the top and bottom, maybe we have to make four in the top. I don't know if there's some sort of math there that I'm not a worry about. Maybe the producers can shed light. Why this one, did they have four versus three? But that's my speculative opinion, is that maybe because they wanted to keep the two on the bottom, that they didn't want to just leave, like, I don't know, maybe there's some asymmetry with three and two.
Well, it was funny because I was saying, okay, who would have been the other third bottom, right? Like, there were, so here are the middle chefs.
Okay.
And it's actually a great way to kind of recap them, right? There were five middle chefs because you had four on top, five in the middle, two on the bottom. Amanda with her black garlic parpadelia with cumin, lamb ragu, and XO sauce, right? And the shrimp chips. There was a general thought that the texture of the pasta was a little dry, but overall a reasonably successful dish. So like, is she really, can you put her on with the other two? Probably not. All right, Manny, Esquita's risotto with a burnt tortilla aioli. Everyone really seemed to like the dish. The only qualm was, hey, is it really chaos? I don't know. It's not really chaos. But boy, we really like it. So she's not going to the bottom. Then you had Laura, who I thought would maybe be the only kind of real argument, which is she did this kind of the tadig, which is that Persian kind of crispy rice. But she did it with Japanese accents, a yuzu koshu sauce. She had a little liqueur on there. She had some, it looked like some pickled daikon, some seaweed salad, whatever, right? Is that of the poor quality of the other two losing dishes? Probably not. Kevin. The atom exploding. Wow. The one guy who truly did the most interpretive take on the challenge. You got to give him credit. You know, sweet potato with vanilla and lemon. And then this like little capsule that looked like something out of a space exhibit that was like, you know, a white chocolate capsule. I love white chocolate. You probably hate it, but I love it, Tom.
Oh, I like white chocolate. Yeah.
Well, it's just, it's not even chocolate. It's just like milk and butter. Ah! All right. So it was a white chocolate capsule with raspberry coulis and tarragon. So like, got to give that guy credit. At least he actually really embraced. He was the true chaos agent, right? And then Kalina, who everyone liked her trash burrito enchilada, you know, and with the kind of the smoky ancho chili crema. But, you know, Gail said, hey, it's a little, it ate a little heavy texture, but God, it was still a successful dish. So my take was, is there just wasn't, sometimes the kind of the pack separates and there's two god awful dishes. And the next, the third worst is actually a pretty decent dish. And I felt like no one else got lower than a B minus. And so like they didn't have the heart to put them on the bottom. Maybe, I don't know.
Now that you're saying it, I'm kind of coming back here. Maybe Amanda was the third one.
More than Laura?
Did it embrace the challenge of the chaos, and the pasta wasn't good.
But also, Laura didn't embrace it either, because it was all, remember, it was plated very contemporary. It was a very orderly dish.
Yeah, but it was good. The actual food, I think, was good. Whereas in Amanda's dish, the pappardelle was dried, too much flour in it. And if you don't nail your pasta, you're usually going to be in the bottom. And as much as I love Amanda, if there is going to be a third on that bottom three, I think it might be Amanda, even though I liked her dish and I've probably eaten like 1,000 times over, because nothing speaks to my like loins than a pappardelle with a lamb ragu. So I would have eaten that dish till the sun came up. But I think if you're going to pick someone, maybe it's Laura, but maybe I'm leaning towards Amanda. But I got to say, I'm not buying the whole chaos is the simplicity. I think it was Gail who might have said it with Manny's dish. We'll get into Danny's.
Let me throw a hot take here as we move on to the four top. You could argue that the judges basically looked at Danny's dish. There is nothing chaotic about it. I mean, you could argue, hey, you know, Chow Farsi usually has lamb and beef, but wow, this guy did scallop mousse. Who would have thunk it? Crazy. But it's not really chaos. It was the most elegant. I mean, in fact, you saw Kristen's like, that food comes out. And I'm like, that's my food. You know, it's like, yeah, it's refined. It is technical. Like, who are we kidding here? Like, his scalloped chow farsi with yuzu koshi foam was a Tom Colicchio, by his own admission, one of the best things he's ever eaten in 21 years of the show.
Yeah. Wow.
B, everything Kristen loves, which is non-chaos, refinement, technical acuity, just great taste.
There's surprise.
Three, just there is nothing chaotic about silken tofu, and that's how Maddie described the texture. So is this one of those cases where the contestant completely defies the assignment, says, screw it, I'm making whatever the freaking hell I want, nails it to such a degree that no one at that table, all of whom have one thing in common. They love great food. This guy served them great food. They're not going to be thinking, it wasn't very chaotic, your perfect dish. Like, you know, so I think it was one of those that proves that if you execute the dish well enough, they will forgive an indifference to interpretation, right? An indifference to the theme of the challenge.
Okay, so chaos. Okay, I'm thinking, you know, the fact that they looked at it and thought it was going to be cabbage, but it had this totally different texture and was a totally surprising dish. Maybe that's the surprise or the chaos element there, is just the element of your brain is expecting X and then it receives Y. And maybe that's the chaos element that he was playing on, but yeah. It certainly wasn't. You know, when Su-An is throwing those sauces everywhere and the droplets, I, like you, Kevin, was like cheering him on as you could kind of see him slowly realizing, you know what? Maybe these droplets, maybe if I smear it everywhere, that's more chaotic. I'm going to lean into it, right, Kevin?
What was confusing about Sue, and I think it was just kind of a little rookie nerves, was even during in the market, he said he was having trouble conceiving the dish. But the funny thing is if you watched him in LCK, like he seems like the perfect chaos agent, right? Like he was a guy who just created chaos and beautiful chaos in the Last Chance Kitchen. Mm. So I was always surprised. I'm kind of like, no, Sue, this is a home game for you, dude.
Yeah.
You know, don't fret. And as he tried to be precise with those dots, it was like, no, just mess, you know, and like just make it basically a schmear, you know, and he did. And by the way, just further evidence, Tom, and I think you and I are, as we often are, in the same place, like really good, like popcorn fried shrimp. Like you love it as a kid. You love it as an adult. It's just so good. I mean, who doesn't love just fried shrimp? Crunchy on the outside, that nice shrimpness on the inside. It's such a good dish.
They loved it. And he's on the top four along with Danny. Like you said, the Tom Colicchio, this is some of the best food I've tasted in 21 years at Top Chef. It reminds me of the dichotomy of what we have with that winning dish where it was Rossica and Danny. And when we talk to Buddha, if you haven't listened to the Buddha interview, what are you doing with your life? If you haven't listened to it yet, you can listen to it on Pack Your Knives Premium, our interview with Buddha. He is a guy that said, you know what, of those two dishes, Rossica and Danny, I actually thought Danny was more impressive because of the editing that he had, that he pulled back. In some ways, that's more impressive. And here, Danny was the guy who is just toying with the pitcher, the opposing pitcher. Just like, I am just going to let you try. You can throw it down the middle. That's fine. You can throw your hardest breaking ball. That's fine. I'm going to sit fastball here. And until I get that fastball, I'm going to crush it. This guy was toying with the competition. He was saying, I'm going to go for a run. I have so much time here. And I think editing is such an important quality on Top Chef. Sometimes, and I thought Dan was going to have trouble here. I thought Dan was just doing too much on the plate, whereas Danny pulled back and really focused his dish and pulled back in an editing way.
To interject, what did he make on that dish you're talking about with Rossica?
Oh, yeah.
Scallop mousse. It was the exact same scallop mousse, just in a different context, right? Mm. That little egg, the one that Buddha loved, was a scallop mousse. It was the exact same thing that was in that cabbage roll. You know, in fact, it's funny, I grew up, they were called halishkas, which was kind of the Ashkenazic version of, I mean, what's beautiful about cabbage rolls is like people all over the world eat them. There's a slight difference to each one. He did his take on it, but he used that scallop mousse. So clearly this is a stupid human trick that he does exceptionally well. I don't know there's anybody who makes sort of scallop mousse for hot, refined, composed dishes better than Danny. And this is the second time he's done it and second time he's won with it. So that scallop mousse is one of his go-to cards. He knows how to make that texture that Maddie loved, but I'm with you there. But it was like, yeah, but it wasn't chaos. It was brilliant, but it wasn't chaos.
Okay. All right, fine. I will give you that. He wins. He gets plus 10 in our scoring system.
As he should have won. Yeah.
Yep. I gave a plus 5 to the rest of them, even though there's 4 of them in total. So Suan gets plus 5. Savannah gets plus 5. Now talk to me about Dan. This was a surprise that Dan, I thought it was just too much going on and that too much seafood, too much going on the plate. That what are the chances that he cooks all the seafood correctly? And you know what? He did it with immunity. He comes in and I thought it was going to be one of these like, yeah, just too much pull back. Like, why do you need 11? It reminded me of Katsuji. You know, Katsuji always added like 13 ingredients too many.
But here's the funny thing. I mean, what's great about it and what worked about it is, you know, in okonomiyaki, you know, you can throw whatever you want in okonomiyaki. It's little bits of octopus and little bits of squid and little bits of shrimp, whatever it is, you know, because at the end of the day, it was 18, but it was really seafood bits, some bacon, and some pickles and a little caviar. Like, herbs go in every dish. It's not like, so it was funny. He got all the credit for having 18 different things. But when you actually boil down the 18 things, it was like, no, there's an intention. It wasn't just random stuff, right? It was seafood, herbs that went well with seafood, bacon to give it kind of a smokiness, and pickles, which give it acidity, right? Like, it made sense. And okonomiyaki is wonderful because it is it's basically that same texture. It's that, you know, kind of similar to a Korean scallion pancake and the funnel cake. It's that just lovely, I love okonomiyaki. And it's just, but it was the perfect, like he got the challenge and just aced it. And you know, whether, I don't think it had anything to do with the immunity. I think he was just doing his thing.
Yeah. What I like about it is with immunity, you go and produce that dish. That's the mark of a really good chef. I think it's time.
We got to talk about the losing dishes.
This was heartbreaking to see those two, because we had the little curveball of both of you could go home. I didn't think that both of them were going to go home. I felt like Rossica, the way they described this dish, Kevin, was horrific.
Ugh, they did not like it. By the way, just let me ask you a question. As a statistician, if there was a parlay at the beginning of the episode where, you know, everyone knows there's going to be two chefs on the bottom, and you wanted to get a parlay and say, I think it's going to be Michelle and Rossica, what kind of odds would you have gotten that there are going to be two of these 11 chefs going to be the bottom, and it's going to be Michelle and Rossica? 500 to 1? 1,000 to 1?
It's got to be up there. Remember Jante Porter, the NBA guy who just got hit for gambling and betting on his own games? He was trying to do an $80,000 parlay that would net him $1 million. And that's what was the red flag that the NBA was like, wait a minute, you're trying to do a parlay that would net you $1 million on a low-level player? Yeah, we're not accepting that bet. I don't think anyone's going to accept a bet on the parlay with Rossica and Michelle, because the odds are just too long. They're way too long. The idea that those two would be at the bottom, absolutely a 1 in 1,000 shot that those two would be on the bottom, especially because Michelle's coming off a quickfire win and Rossica is coming off two wins in this competition without being in the low. She hasn't been in the bottom yet. And so she's going to be at the bottom here, the bottom two with Michelle. It feels like to me, Kevin, was that as much? Were you watching and being like, ooh, this is not a good idea? Or did the chef's judges table really surprise you that it just didn't? Because this is the thing. We've always talked about it. In Top Chef, the one thing you can't do is taste the food. And it seemed like this was the ultimate representation of our limitations as Top Chef viewers and podcasters and prognosticators. We can't taste the food. And that right there was the thing that Rossica went home for.
I mean, I don't know. I have a lot of trust in her, right? She's been executing risks. She's been doing crazy stuff and making it not just work, but excel. You know, we think back to the pretzel barley cake, you know, the Daw Canal. I mean, everything she's done. So you tell me, oh, Rossica's doing an eggplant roulade type thing stuffed with crab and creme fraiche. You know, I'm thinking, yeah, creme fraiche in a hot context, is warm temperature context, is a little iffy. Mm-hmm. Oh, there's a mushroom conserva and some duca and some garlic tahini. Oh, okay. That those flavor profiles make general sense. I mean, crab is kind of the, which of these things is not like the other in that set of ingredients, but hey, she did barley and pretzels, for God's sake. So like, what am I worried about? And so I don't know. I mean, I think that eggplant can be, I mean, a lot of people don't like, I mean, it does have a slimy texture if you don't
roast it. Yeah.
You know, treat it correctly. It can be that sort of unsatisfying. And especially if you do it kind of mush on, you know, there's a real mush on mush potential for, oh, the filling is, you know, because it's a roulade, like the filling is mushy and the actual eggplant's mushy and I didn't get a chance to sear it. And I didn't get a chance to really take any of the moisture out of it. Like, in retrospect, it's easy to say it's a bad idea, except this is somebody who has taken what I think to lesser chefs would be bad ideas and elevating them to great food all season. So, like, what are you going to do with that? But yeah, it just, she took a risk and she did not execute it. And the other thing apparently that was strange, and I think that everyone found strange, is like, it wasn't just the texture in the concept. It was under seasoned, right? Like, you almost can imagine her getting away with it, but like, oh, but the flavors were there. No, they weren't. Like, apparently for the first time in since show, she kind of just really under seasoned. Now, she had the salt issue last week with the sturgeon sauce, but this was a technical error in addition to being a conceptual error. But it was very funny in the sense that, I mean, it's not funny because she's one of my favorite chefs on the show and I really just kind of want to continue to watch her cook. But when that thing that, like, imagine all the technique that went in there and like, yeah, it almost made Maddie like more angry, right? Like, because, you know, Michelle had the opposite problem, right? Like, I'm not going to say she phoned it in, but it just wasn't a very high concept dish, right? Here is like, to go to all that effort on Rossica's part to make bad food was like even scarier, as he said, right? It wasn't she kind of slopped it together. Like, wow, the technical expertise required to do all that stuff. Well, it didn't work, right? And so that's sort of, I mean, at least she went out with risk. I mean, there's nothing worse than somebody who goes out phoning it in, and she did not do that.
No, the sous vide, I was a little worried about that. When she made the decision to do a sous vide eggplant, it just...
Yeah.
I love a good roasted charred eggplant, like something that's really, you know, it gets almost like crispy. That's the kind of eggplant that I like to have. And so the sous vide cook on that wasn't, to me, just very inspiring. And you're right. when the descriptions are no flavor, the descriptions are as bland can be, one very one note. And then Sophia Rose, who I think you really enjoyed her.
Yeah, I thought she was a really nice injection of energy at the table. I really liked her as sort of a guest at the table. I really did.
Sophia Rowe, I should say. I said Rose. Sophia Rowe, who is a James Beard Award-winning chef, writer, and founder of Apartment Miso, an Emmy Award nominated TV host. Shout out to Sophia Rowe. And she said it was very like slug-like, which like, oh, another dagger here. And she ends up going home in the sense of going to Last Chance Kitchen. I really hope she comes back in the competition. But when it was coming down to like, are we going to send two home? Kevin, I didn't think they were going to send two home. I thought it was pretty clear that she had the lesser of the two dishes here. Michelle did not do herself any favors here, which seemed very basic of a dish, right, Kevin? Like this seemed the opposite of what chaos was supposed to be. And you know what? Sometimes Manny Ramirez is going to strike out four times in a game.
Yeah, it seemed like a quick fire dish. Right. Like, you know, she does an array, you know, sort of, you know, Lebanese meat pie. Right. And then but it's, hey, I'm going to do it with kind of that Vietnamese shrimp pork, you know, sausagey kind of substance. Right. You know, and then like a nem nuangy kind of thing. And she does that. There's some puffed rice and an herb salad. Right. Like the herb salad.
Yeah.
Is to me like, you know, when you do herb salad, when you're on a cook off and you got 20 minutes and you need some garnish with the protein that you only had like you had a scallop, it's a quick fire Last Chance Kitchen. That's when you see herb salad. Herb salad is a euphemism for, hey, this is a quick fire. I need to put something on the plate that makes it refined. Right. That's not an elimination challenge. I mean, this was a quick fire dish from a chef far too advanced to be doing that. Right. And then the cook was bad, right? Someone, you know, in Tom's case, the pastry was burnt. In Kristen's case, the meat was undercooked, right? Like, it just didn't work. And I think that she just got really, I think she was just spooked by the lack of instruction. Some people like to have even light parameters. I mean, and that's the funny thing is she's so generative and creative. All of her dishes have been, this is not someone lacking for ideas, right? Like, you know, from the very outset, I think she did just really a charred corn sauce with crispy chorizo with a ricotta lobster pasta. I mean, that the assignment was pasta. Like, it's not like she was given anything else, right? Like, she just needs one variable, right? She doesn't need a lot. But she's been really generative and creative in her ideas. And that's sort of why I was just so kind of shocked that she basically does a quick fire dish.
It wasn't her best. And you know what? There's another day. You know, what is the Earl Weaver quote? You know, momentum is just the next day's starting pitcher. And I feel like, you know, she had a bad game, but you know what? She gets another opportunity here to redeem herself. And I think she will. And Michelle on my team gets the minus or gets 0 points here for being on the bottom. We're seeing Rossica go to Last Chance Kitchen. By the way, Sue on when he left Last Chance Kitchen, he said, toodles, Last Chance Kitchen. Hello, Top Chef. Mm-hmm. I haven't heard toodles in a while, Kevin. We need to bring back toodles as a goodbye, a farewell synonym.
More of kind of an Anglo convention, isn't it? Toodles.
Yeah, toodles.
Toodles, I think, is an abbreviation of toodaloo.
Toodaloo.
I think that is more of a kind of an Anglo thing. I will have to ask our consultants over in London, my sister over there, who generally listens.
No surprise, I'm a fan of it. Well, Kevin, I did some research here because Rossica, you had asked me, hey, Tom, have we ever seen something like this before where someone who has been this dominant at this point in the competition go home? And the answer is there is one person that I think is a pretty good proxy for this. I went back in my Top Chef database that I have created and looked for someone who had two elimination challenge wins in the first six episodes. So this is the sixth episode that Rossica goes home. So she's had two victories, two elimination challenge wins. Has that ever happened that within the first six episodes, someone went home after having two wins? And the answer is yes. There's been three chefs who have at least two wins and have gone home within six episodes. One is Chuy Valencia in season 9, Texas, along with Heather Terhune in that season, Top Chef season 9. However, in both of those cases, the wins were part of team challenges, so I kind of threw them out, okay?
Throw those out.
Rossica's winning pure individual challenges here, and I think that, you know, kind of throw those two out. The one that had two elimination challenges victories and then got home sent home directly afterwards. So an in and then a win and then a win and then out. Season 16 Kentucky Nene win.
See, our friend Nene. I always believed in Nene. I remember I kind of drafted her. I wasted a high pick on the All-Star season that she was in.
It was a tragic loss, was having Nene go home so early. And you know what? Rossica, similar energy where I just want her on my TV. Kevin dreams of Nene, May says. So I really think that this is a fair comp. What do you think? Rossica as this year's Nene.
I think that's actually a really good comp. And you just know in your heart of hearts that she is, you put 10 chefs in an elimination challenge, she is as likely to win that challenge as any of those other 9 chefs, yet just has a sort of a boundless appetite for risk that can doom her. And it is sort of, it's some cowboy chefing. You know, she's a bit of a cowboy. Every dish has to be a pretzel, barley, you know, macaron or, an eggplant roulade filled with God knows what, right? Like she has like, you know, she is not going to color within the lines. She has things she wants to do. She is in there to execute risk. And sometimes risk executes you.
I couldn't have said it better myself. And I'm really upset to see it. However, that also means that I have pulled ahead of the chef's table slash Kevin squad here in after episode 6. I've pulled into the lead after, you know, a rough start to the season. I am now, Kevin, 82-74. Ooh. I had a 29-point outing. You had 8 points this week. So in the last 2 weeks, I've scored 45 points and your team has stunk it up with just 20. So you opened up Chef's Table with a 27-9 lead and I have closed the gap. I am like the Denver Nuggets against the Los Angeles Lakers here in the playoffs. I'm always going down by 10 points, but I'm going to come back and take the lead. So Kevin, you've got on your squad, you still have Manny, you still got Dan, you still got Kevin and Savannah. And I'm very upset that you have Savannah on your team because I think she really arrived. But you know what? I got the 2 best remaining chefs in the competition. I got Danny and I got Michelle on my team. And I still think Amanda.
I think you left out a third.
Amanda?
No.
And Su-on?
Su-on! I mean, Tom, I'm telling you right now, I might have to go to the board and ask to marshal the resources for a trade for Su-on. Although now I'm showing you my hand, so what am I supposed to do? Like, I'm supposed to do that thing where it's like, oh, I really want is Michelle. Well, all right, what about Su-on? Would you?
Yeah.
Kind of the old, you know, Brad Pitt is Billy Bean calling Dave Dombrowski in Moneyball or something. You know, it's like, but I'm telling you, man, you got, how did you get Su-on? The commissioner awarded you Su-on, is that correct?
Yeah, the commissioner, you know, he took David Murphy and then.
That's right.
If he hadn't had David Murphy, then I think he would have gotten Su-on. But because of that, because you had an additional pick, give me the guy who's got to come from behind in the Last Chance Kitchen and win 6 episodes in a row.
No, I got you.
And just on that, it was cool to see how he was brought to tears after he won Last Chance Kitchen, coming back into the competition. As we've heard on previous episodes.
Well, because his wife has left him. That's why. Yes.
My wife has left me and all I have to show for it is a Last Chance Kitchen medal. He gets back into the competition. He's now in the Top Chef. And so as much as we lose Rossica, and I'm very upset to lose Rossica on the main event, we do pick up Su-on. And listen, Rossica, if you're listening,
yes,
we want to have you on the show. We love your style of cooking. We love your energy. And we were so sad to see you go. And as much as this wasn't your best moment on the show, we'd love to hear your thoughts on it and what the kind of the whole arc of the season so far. And you know what? Maybe you say, hey, guys, I'm not going to come on just yet. I might have a little, you know, a couple things up my sleeve. Maybe I'll come in later. More power to you. Maybe we bring you on later after you perform at Last Chance Kitchen. But we love you, Rossica. We want you to be on the show.
I also want to hear about her travels. You know me. I want to. She's been bopping around Tamil Nadu and doing all kinds of fun research. Always love to hear about people traveling. Tom, closing thoughts before we kind of head in. We're back to 10. Back to 10 contestants. Closing thoughts.
Toodles, Rossica. That's what I'll say.
For Tom Haberstroh, for producer Anthony Mays, this is Kevin Arnovitz, and this is Pack Your Knives.